Hey, all right. Hey, I want to thank you all for coming to this breakout. You had a lot of choices, and you chose correctly, okay? You did. You chose correctly. As a matter of fact, you're already a winner today because you chose right today. I'm Monty Patton, and I get the privilege of introducing you to our speakers and presenters for this evening. Both these guys are extremely good friends of mine. We got Brian Bowman. Brian came to Phoenix about 10 years ago, started Valley Life Church, and out of that time, it started about 8 other churches and still going strong. And you're going to just love what he has to say. And one of the churches that he started was Mission Valley Church with Mike Lee. Mike is excellent. Now, I've heard both these guys speak multiple times, and I'm just telling you from experience that you're going to come away with some great stuff. I've never heard them any time where haven't gone, dude, that is really, really good. These guys are amazing. And they are a blessing personally to me as friends and as brothers. And we work in the same city, in the same state, and just love these guys so very much. And you are going to be blessed by what they have to share and the opportunities you have to learn. Let me pray for them, and then we'll just get straight into it because you guys are probably, your stomach's starting to get a little cranky and getting closer to dinner and all that stuff. So let me pray. Father God, I thank you so much for allowing us, Father, to experience great worship and a great word, Father, in the main auditorium today. I thank you, Father, for what you've spoken to our hearts about, and Father, how that you've instructed and encouraged us and even pushed us forward. Lord, I thank you that we get a chance to, Father, in these next moments, to hear about this breakout, about business of church planting, about how, about people, about processes, and about these performance indicators that these guys know so very well about. Father, I thank you for these guys' leadership, Brian, and Father, I thank you for Mike. Father, I pray you'll bless them. Let them just, Father, speak out of the overflow of their heart. Father, help us to listen, because, Lord, I know that you have things to teach us. It's in your name we give you praise. Amen. Thank you, Brian.
Okay. I'm dealing with a little bit of laryngitis, but the year is 2004. It's May the 6th. I turned 30 years old that day. It's also the day that I'd moved from rural Oklahoma to Portland, Oregon, to plant a church with the North American Mission Board. This is under, you know, the other way of doing things. But it was back in the day. I'm 30 years old. It's raining. I'm in an apartment complex. I just, you know, got all my stuff. The Penske truck is still full of things, and I'm carrying it into the apartment where I have 2 little kids, and my wife is making a home out of this apartment. And I'm talking to this guy that's sweeping up the place because he works for the apartment complex, and I thought, this is my target guy. This is exactly who I need to reach. He's mean. He has earrings in both ears. He's super cool. I'm a redneck from Oklahoma, and this is my project. I want to evangelize this dude. And he's just asked me, when is your church? Because I said, hey. He said, where are you from? I said, Oklahoma. And he said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm here to plant a church. And he said, oh, cool. Me and my girlfriend been thinking about getting into church. And I was like, really? Why? No, I said... I was like, dude, you should come to my church. And he goes, okay, cool. When is it? It's day one. I'm in Portland one day. And I said, when's good for you, man? Legit. He goes, Thursday? I said, Thursday. That's when it is. It's in my apartment. It was at that moment I thought, there's got to be a better way. I haven't been trained. I haven't read books on this. Certainly somebody knows how to do this. There should be a system for this kind of stuff. We got the church planted. Eventually, after 4 years, we moved back to Oklahoma, regrouped, and I thought, I've got to figure out a better way to do this. And if I can figure out a better way, I really want to help other church planters not have that moment of terror and have a plan. So we put together the church. It went really well. I'm so thankful for the things that went into it going well. And we put together a residency. Our first residency lasted about 6 months. We sent the guy out. That wasn't long enough. The next residency lasted about a year, and we sent the guy out. And we thought, man, we still got to get better at training guys. And along comes Mike Lee. Mike Lee, just to let you know, to the short version of the story, is Mike is a business leader in the city of Phoenix. He's a part of a group of other business leaders called Vistage. Some of you guys know about Vistage. And he was last year crowned business leader of the year through the Vistage network for the city of Phoenix. He's got a Yeah, he's got a construction company, that sort of thing. He walks into the church, and the reason he's there is he said, hey, I heard Valley Life is a church that makes disciples and plant churches, and I want to plant a church. And I'm absolutely 100% intimidated by this guy. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool, man. You should just join the church. We'll talk about church planting one day, but you should just join the church. And he does. And I'm like, oh, wow. Maybe we can really make something out of this guy. So after about, I don't know, several months, I invited him into the church planting process. And I realized, man, I have a lot to learn from Mike. Mike has planted, how long ago, Mike?
3 years.
And after 3 years, you know, now he became an elder on our team. And then we sent him out. His church is now an independent church. They're paying their own bills, doing their own thing. And he's going to talk to us about the stuff, the correlation, the stuff that transfers from business leader and church planter. And I think you're going to get a lot out of it. I'm just here to chime in from time to time.
Okay, sorry. Jesse's in the back telling me what to do. Well, I don't know what you wanted me to do, Jesse.
If everybody just move in, we've got
some. Yeah. Oh, Jesse wants you guys to do that, like the Baptist squeeze. Like, yeah, it's like.
There's good. A whole front row, fellas. No. And ladies.
The hotel
won't allow us to stand.
Oh, we're not allowed to stand. It's for real. We really do have to just bunch in. Yeah, there's seats right up here up front, right where the glory spot right there. It's good stuff.
I can't believe it's a full house.
All right.
Come on, baby.
Good. All right. Hey. So we're going to get started here. It'll be helpful just to do a quick survey to figure out who's in the room. For us, you know who Brian is, who I am. We just want to see real quick who you are. If you are a planter, please just raise your hand. If you're a planter, good. Fantastic. Thank you. If you're a planter wife, just planter wives, thank you so much. Bless you. Fantastic. Unbelievable people. You're just so good. If you're on staff at a church, just so we can know who that is, good. All right, good. Just want to see who we're talking to. And then if you're somebody else in the room that you just really want to just shout out, like you're a hotel lobbyist or so, just we're walking through Disneyland and got tired spending money. And all right, good stuff. We want to start off just the verse that we're going to look at today that's just going to kind of put a guidepost around this is this. And he said, the kingdom of God is if a man should scatter a seed on the ground, he sleeps and rises night and day, and the seed sprouts and grows. He knows not how. He knows not how. The earth produces by itself first the blade, then the ear, then the full grain in the ear. But when the grain is ripe at once, he puts it in the sickle because the harvest has come. We're going to start off. We're going to wrap this whole breakout session under two premises. The first one is this. God grows his church. God grows his church. God grows his church. There's nothing that I can teach you. There's nothing that Brian can teach you. We got really smart guys. And Tony Valente is in the room. We got Jackie Allen in the room. We got really smart guys. And there's nothing anybody in here can tell you about how to grow your church. God will grow your church, and you won't understand how it happens. You really won't. There'll be weeks that you'll work so hard, and nobody new will come. You're a planter, and you do all this work. You put out so many more signs. You do all this work, and not one new person comes. And then the next week, you do the same amount of work. You work just as many hours, and all of a sudden 12 new people walk in, 12 first-time guests, and you don't know how they got there because God grows his church. I want you to understand that. We always got to understand that. But premise two is this. We are going to do the work of the planter. We're going to do the work of the planter. Look, if you're looking for the session that talks about life balance and taking it easy and having Fridays off, this ain't it, Chief. I don't know how to tell you. This is not it. I am a co-vocational pastor. I work hard. Brian works hard. And in this session, if no other session at any other Send gathering, you're going to get permission to work hard. You're going to get encouraged to work hard because we will do the work of a planter. God's going to grow his church, but we are going to work for it. And so here's a couple of things, the key areas that we're going to look at today. People, processes, and performance indicators. We'll start by looking at people. People are the most important part of any organization. I want you to understand, no matter what you thought you were getting into, you are in the people business. All right? If you don't like people, find something else to do. You are in the people business. You are leading people. You are reaching people for the Lord. You are talking to people about Jesus. You are leading people in your organization. Some of those people are going to be paid staff. Some of those are going to be volunteered staff. The people in your organization are going to get the greatest amount of resources that any organization has. It's where we spend our money as a church plant. Most of us as church planters are going to rent a space. We spend the money, the biggest majority of money, on people. That's because the people are doing the work of the Lord, and so we're going to do that. People get those resources. They are always, always, always more important than process. There's a reason that we're going to talk people first and then process, because the people are more important than the process. We will change processes. We will adapt processes. We'll make processes work, but we're going to do so with people in mind. People are very, very important. And so they get the majority of the leader's attention. Here's the thing I want us to know, though, as we are going to think about people, and we're going to think about the business of church planting and thinking about people, it would be really, really easy to start focusing in on staffs, to start focusing in on the people that are going to be in the pew. But what I want us to focus on first is to focus on ourselves. If you are going to be the church planter, if you are going to be the one that is going to lead this organization, as tempting as it is to focus on others in the organization, the leader needs to first look in the mirror. You need to look in the mirror and see how you're showing up as a leader, see how you're showing up as a worker, see as if you're the one that's out there leading. Again, God's going to build his church, but we are going to be the ones that are out there leading. I had a business coach that would sit in his car every morning before he would go into work, and he would say, "How am I showing up today? How am I showing up today?" Because when I walk in that room, the people in the organization don't care that I got caught in traffic, don't care that I spilled coffee on myself, don't care that I didn't sleep good last night. They are expecting the leader to walk in the room. And when you walk into your staff meetings, whether they're staff meetings of volunteers, whether you, when you walk in front of the church, the leader has showed up. And so how are you showing up? We're going to first focus on ourselves. And so we thought a good place to just spend just a minute here is to just talk a little bit out of Good to Great. It's a fantastic book if you've never read it, just about some of the characteristics of what is called a level 5 leader. The first thing, just understanding this paradox that the ambition is for the organization, not self. You should ask yourself as a leader, are you trying to build yourself up, or are you trying to build this organization up? God has called you to plant a church. God has called you to make a church where there didn't used to be one, where people would come to know his name. And so are you making much of that and making much of God, or are you making much of yourself? The level 5 leader will care much more about the organization and what's going on there. Also, a level 5 leader is going to be driven. I do not know a business leader in the Phoenix marketplace. I sit in this a board group with 15 other business leaders every week. They run organizations of every size, from $1 million a year in gross revenue to the largest is $350 million a year in gross revenue. And every single one of those leaders is driven, almost fanatically driven, almost obsessed, thinking about how can I make my business better? How can I make the people that go to my business better? And as church planters, we need to be driven like that. We need to be fanatic about that. You wake up and you think about this. Hey, look, let's do the right thing. Let's wake up in the morning and have our coffee and do our quiet time, but then let's give ourselves permission to think about this organization that God has asked us to plant, that God has called us to plant. Let it get a lot of our time and our energy and our thought process to be driven. A level 5 leader will build successors. You should look at in your organization who is going to take over next. I think one of the coolest things that we've heard so far today is Vance Pittman saying that if you don't know this, Vance Pittman just finished his building, and now he's going to go and take on this new job with Send Network, and he has built up his successors. He's built up the guys that are going to take that over. I think that's really cool. Level 5 leaders share praise. They take on the blame. I like to say it like this: when we do good, we all do good. When something doesn't go good, it's on me. It's on me in the church. If you don't like how it's going in the church, it's the leader. Come talk to the leader. Come talk to me if you don't like it. You don't like the way the signs look? Come talk to me. All right? You like the way things go? That's my whole team. They're all doing a fantastic job, aren't they? Right? So we share the kudos and we take the blame. And then finally, level 5 leaders come from within the organization oftentimes. So you don't have to be this huge personality. You don't have to be somebody that's done this 100 times before. You have been called. You have the gifting that God has given you, so you can jump in and do this. So there seems to be a fear, I think, a lot of times. There seems to be like a fear in the church world that simply doesn't exist in the business world. When they asked us to do this seminar, they said, well, talk about like the similarities between business and church. And I think one of the biggest differences between business and church is this fear that exists in the church world that doesn't exist in the business world, and that is the fear to be great. You see, every single organization that's out there, every single business that's started anywhere, somebody wants that business to be great. One of my favorite businesses in Phoenix, Arizona, is a little place called Zook's. They make these sandwiches. They're like hand-pressed sandwiches. They're really cool. And it's this woman started this business. She got the idea from her grandma about how to make these hand-pressed sandwiches. And she made this, and she wanted it to be great. When you would go in and talk to her, she would say, hey, this is how my grandma taught me how to make these sandwiches. And this is how we do it here. And we don't do it that way here. We do it this way. And she wanted it to be really great. And it has gone from this tiny little one-person shop into five different locations in Phoenix, and it's good. It's really good. They want it to be great. My own company, it started off when the original entrepreneur, my father-in-law, started this company, and he went and he took out a loan to buy some paint equipment, and he sat down on a paint bucket and he read the manual on how to start this machine up and start going out and doing painting. That's how he started the thing, and he wanted it to be great, and it's turned into a $15 million company that employs 100 people and supports 100 families. It's okay to be great. And so today I want to give you permission to be great. We serve a great God. You have been given a great calling. Yes, Pastor Noe just talked a little bit about a painful privilege, but let us not forget the privilege. The privilege. I mean, this is a great job. This is a fantastic gig. I mean, it's like, sometimes I'm like, would people get paid for this? That we're going to get up and talk about Jesus. We're going to like tell people about Jesus for a living, and people are going to give us money, the food. This is great. I mean, this is a great job. All right. And so it's okay to be great at this. I want to give you permission to be great. I don't want you to feel like, hey, I got to be careful. I don't want to be too good at this. Be great at this. Be great at this. Make great churches. Make great multiplying, reproducing churches for the good of the kingdom, for the good of the gospel, so more people can hear about Jesus. Every single community where a church is planted is going to be better for a good church being there. We say that we want to have churches that are vital to the community. And a church that is great, that is doing great things, that is aspiring to greatness for the Lord, is going to be good for the community. So I want to give yourself permission to that. And so as we think about this great church and this great organization that great people are going to build, what do those great people do? And I want you to know this, that great leaders of great churches work on the church and not just in it. We're thinking about people here, and we're looking at ourselves first. Where do we spend our time? Great leaders of great churches work on the church, not just in it. And so I would ask you, do you spend your time working in the church or on the church? Do you spend your time working in the church or on the church? Here are some ways to work in the church. You can write sermons. You can lead staff meetings that plan this Sunday and evaluate last Sunday. That's working inside the church. You can meet with and counsel people. You can meet with team leads, deacons, or elders about tasks that need to get done. These are ways that we work inside the church. And here's the thing. I think a lot of times this is the thing that is easier for us. This is the thing that comes natural to us. And this is the thing that we want to spend the majority of our time doing. And I would caution you as a church planter, when you got 58 people showing up, you may not need to spend 30 hours prepping your sermon. Some of y'all are upset, but Monty agreed with that. He's been doing it for a long time, so I'm going to take it. We need to be working on our churches. What does it look like to work on the church? Well, it looks like setting the strategic plan for the year. Do you know where you're trying to go? Does your staff have an idea, whether they be volunteer or paid? Do they have an idea of where they're trying to get to? Are you setting that? Are you setting the five-year plan for your church? Do you know where you're trying to get? Do your people know? Do they know what the next big thing is? Are you doing a building campaign? Are you trying to reach a particular neighborhood? What is it that you're trying to get done? Are you meeting with people to cast mission, vision, and values? That is working on the church. It is a needed committed thing, and we will spend time working with people and counseling people. That's working in the church. But when we meet with people to talk about what we're doing and how they're part of it and how they're coming alongside of us, that is working on the church. Are we meeting with our strategic partners? You are church planners. We're church planners. We need strategic partners to help us, to come alongside of us. Are we meeting with them to tell them what's going on? Are we meeting with them to say, hey, here's the next thing, and this is how you can come in and be part of it? That is working on the church. That stuff is hard, and that's the work that a church planter should be doing. Leading staff meetings that evaluate how you're doing against key performance indicators. It is so tempting to spend a staff meeting, say, well, how did Sunday go, and what are we going to plan for this Sunday? That's working in the church. How are we doing against our 1 year, 5 year, 3 year plan? Those are the questions when you're working on the church. Here's what I want you to know. If you're not working on the church because you're so busy working in the church, then you can be sure that nobody's working on the church.
That's right,
man. If you're not doing it, if you're not doing the work on the church, you can be sure nobody's doing it. And I'll also tell you this, just to give you this permission. If you find that you don't like working on the church, if you find that that is just not where you find joy, then I want to give you permission to go work on staff for somebody else that is working on their church.
Come on, man.
You see, you can serve on a staff and work in the church, and those are needed things. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you are the church planner, you are the leader, the people on your staff and the people in the pews are expecting you to know where this church is trying to get in 5 years. Work on the church. Here's just a little tool. We're going to throw some tips and tools in here. This is just a something to get you to think about, like, how are things going? If you wanted to think, like, where do I go to start thinking about working on the church? We just got like a bullseye up here. It says, preaching, kids, men, youth, facilities, first impressions, community groups, community outreach, and worship. And what'll happen is I just have one of these up in my office. And every day I'll just sit down and look at it. And I'll say, where is this at? Kids ministry. If 5 is fantastic, it's exemplary, I'd want to tell people about it. And 1 is like, wow, that's embarrassing. I hope kids don't show up. Where are we really at? Like, where are we really at? And here's the thing I want you to know. I can't worship a lick. I mean, I can't sing. I can't carry a tune in a bucket. All the things about guys that can't sing, that's me. I can't play an instrument. I can't do that. There's literally no way for me to work in worship. My worship leader would not let it happen. But I can work on worship by doing things like saying to my worship leader, hey, what do we need to do to help elevate the worship here? Well, hey, what resources do you need? How can I plug him into other worship leaders that are maybe doing it better than he is? How can I resource him better? How can I cast vision to help him get on the team, right? I don't work in kids ministry mostly because it meets at the same time that I'm supposed to be preaching, but I can work on kids ministry when my kids ministry leader says, I want to pull off VBS and I know that we don't have the money for it. I better go get with some strategic partners, cast vision for how we're going to reach a neighborhood with VBS this year. This is how you can spend some time working on the church. Look at these areas and key in on them and get to work. Some just additional practices that you can do. Here's just some good ones. Go to organizations you consider great. Churches, restaurants, stores, amusement parks. Disneyland is right over there. Do you guys know that people will pay $150 a day to get into a place where they then spend $300 a day on average? There must be something great going on over there. Walk in, walk around, look around, and see if there's anything applicable there to what you could bring back to church. Great leaders are constantly thinking about their church. Like, hey, did you notice the way we got greeted when we pulled into the hotel lobby? Are my greeters doing at least that good of a job? Because the only thing this place has is beds. We have the gospel. Please, God, let us greet people better than the Westin lobby people. Come on, right? Oh, man, I got to come on. Man, I feel so Baptist right now. All right, then. Once we've properly examined ourselves and looked at these things and how we're looking, we need to start looking at our people. Because people are the lifeblood of any organization, whether you own a construction company or you're running a church. Every organization across every sector in America right now that I'm aware of is asking the same question: where do I find people? Where do I find the people? Where do I get the people? How do I get them into my organization? If you work at Skyline Builders right now, you know that we are looking for people. That's one of the things that we're doing. If you're at Chaz Roberts Air Conditioning in Phoenix, Arizona, they are currently 387 technicians short. They want them. They can pay them. They just can't find them. Here's the thing that I want you to know. Top talent must be built when it cannot be procured. Top talent has got to be built when it cannot be procured. Here's a couple of places that don't have to procure. Tesla doesn't have to procure anybody because they have all the money in the world and they'll get whoever they want. Amazon will do that. Facebook will do that. And you and I ain't it. That we ain't those people. We don't have those resources. And so we are going to have to build that top talent. The rest of us have to build it. We have to build the people that we want. So I just have two case studies. I'll talk about one and Brian the other. The first case study is this. This gentleman's name is Scott Jagger. Scott Jagger came to work in my construction company 3 years ago. He was a laborer at a countertop installation company. You know where I found him? He was greeting at my church. He was greeting at my church. I said, Scott, what do you do for a living? He said, oh, I've been installing countertops. I said, are you any good at that? And he said, no. And I said, you really are good at greeting. You're really good with people. You greet really well. You think you'd like to come work for me? Scott came and worked for me. He started off as a laborer making $32,000 a year. Last year, he managed $3.5 million worth of construction projects and made $100,000. How did that happen? We built him. I couldn't find a project manager, and so I built one. I built one. I said, here is a guy that has some intangibles. Here's a guy that has some skills, and we're going to build him up. And we'll talk about how we do that in a second. And so if some of you might be saying, well, yeah, that works in the construction industry. You could build up a guy, but can it work in a church? Case study number two, Matt Walker.
Okay, let's breathe. Mike is crushing. I'm so proud. I could not be more proud. Matt Walker's dad is a pastor in the Northwest. Matt Walker grew up, I love Jesus. Dad loves Jesus. We all love Jesus. But as soon as he got an opportunity to do his own thing, I'm out of here. He made Dad one promise before he moved to Phoenix. I'll go to church some when I get out of, when I get out of your house. So Matt moves to Phoenix. He works for an ammunition company. Sunday morning rolls around, his first Sunday in Phoenix, and he remembered the promise to Dad. So he's like, okay, I'll go. He tells Siri, take me to church. Siri takes him to Valley Life Church. He walks in. At this time, Matt's still doing all the bad things, sleeping with his girlfriend, drinking too much, all that sort of stuff. He walks in, and on his way out, I greeted him and said, hey, man, what's your deal? And I kind of dug in his life. And eventually, I'm still holding on to the dude's hand. I won't let him go. And I was like, I see you as a leader in this church. Matt would later tell me, I'm in the wrong place. I'm not leading anything. But he started off, like it says, working with the youth group as a volunteer. And then he came on staff as full-time youth and facility. And now he's serving as the next-gen director over 100 kids, which is now more than that. Every spiritual gift needed in any church is needed in Matt Walker's ministry. And he's leading all these young men and women to disciple all these kids.
Yeah, built. Talent that was built, all right? When you're a church planter, you can't afford to go out and just hire a youth leader, right? You got to go find one and make one. And so how do you do this? Well, there's a lot that goes into building top talent, but it's certainly not less than clear expectations, clear coaching, and clear accountability. Clear expectations, clear coaching, and clear accountability. Here's the thing. People want to do a good job, and they have no chance of doing a good job if they don't know what a good job looks like. There's nobody that woke up today and said, man, I want to go suck at my job. Nobody. You take the guy that's got the worst job in America, and he wants to do a good job of playing for the Lakers. Okay, he wants to. He wants to. Sorry, I'm a Phoenix guy. He wants to. He can't do it, but he wants to. Clear expectations are the first step in any staff member doing a good job, whether paid or unpaid. And I think, if I'm being honest, sometimes churches do a really bad job of giving clear expectations for what we want done. This is how a hire sometimes happens, especially a volunteer hire. Hey, you got some extra time? Yeah? You want to help me plant this church? Yeah? Well, what do you think you'd be good at? I'm pretty good with social media. Okay, you can be in charge of our social media. What chance does that person have of being successful? How would we possibly know if they're doing a good job or not? Sometimes we get really excited and we hire a big hire, like our worship leader, and we can afford to pay that person, $20 a week. Yes, sometimes. We bring on a worship leader and they say, well, what do you want us to do? What do I do? What's my job? Well, you're going to lead worship. Okay, cool. So like three songs or four. Hey, man, you pick it. You know, you're the leader. You do what you want. We've given them no idea, no expectation. This is what I think. Every single person that works in our organization should have a clear scope of work of what it is we expect them to do. We just threw a sample one up here and keep going. There it is. This is a sample scope of work for our worship leader. And the way that we broke this out is we broke out roles and responsibility. This is what you are going to do. If you email us, I thought you were getting a copy of this. If you email us, we'll send you all this stuff if you're interested. I'll get that to you right at the end. Brian won't let me forget. He'll probably write them down later on. Every single thing up here says, this is what you're going to be doing. And what I like about the way that we're writing scopes of work at Valley Life Church and now at Mission Valley Church is we even tell people how much of their time per week they're going to spend on that, right? Here's the thing. If your worship leader comes in and he spends 100% of his time getting ready for Sunday, is that what you want him to do? Or is there more that you want him to do? And so we've broken out. This is what we want you to do. This is how much of the time we want you to spend doing it. And then this is what's really fun. When you sit down and have conversations with that person in the clear coaching we're going to give in a minute, you can measure how they're doing against what you've asked them to do. What you've asked them to do and they've agreed to do. How many of you can honestly say that every single person on your staff, you don't have to raise your hand, has a clear scope of work of what you expect them to do? And yet all of our people want to do a good job for us. Doing a good job for the pastor is like better than money for a lot of people at the church. They want to do good work for you, but they don't know how to do it because we haven't told them what we expect. So give clear expectations. And once we have clear expectations, then we can clearly coach because we've said, this is what it looks like to achieve what I've asked you to achieve. And now let me coach you on how to do it. Let me coach you where you're doing it well. Let me coach you where you're not. Here's what I want you to know about coaching. The New York Yankees 2022 active payroll, $210 million. $210 million. Minnesota Twins 2021 payroll, $74 million. Now that's still a lot of money, but one of these organizations has to care a lot more about coaching than the other one. Guess which one you are? You ain't the Yankees. If you are, I'd like to talk to you about a gospel opportunity. Coaching. Since we can't have the top talent, we have to coach up the talent that we have. Clear coaching is the second step in helping your staff achieve their very best. Here's some clear coaching fundamentals. Clear coaching fundamentals look like I want you to blank by blank. Oftentimes we'll tell people, hey, it'd be really cool if you could like add a drummer to the band. All right, cool. Well, someday I might. It's totally different to say, I would like to see two drummers added to the band by next Thursday. They have an opportunity then to either meet the expectations or not meet the expectations. Here's clear coaching. I like when you did this because this is what happened. Last week, our worship leader did something totally different that he hadn't done before. He incorporated a new element in worship. And so on Monday, when I had the one-to-one, I didn't just say, hey, I thought that was a really cool element that you added. I said, I like the way that you added that element because this is what it did. That's clear coaching. I like what you did because of this. And sometimes we'll just be like, hey, good job this morning. No good coach has ever said to his players, good job today. Why? What did they do good? They want to know. Give them more of that. It's also, I don't like what you did when you did this because of this. I don't like the way that you interrupted the staff meeting today because this is what happened because of it. I don't like the way that you showed up late today because this is what happened. We need to give clear feedback, clear coaching, what they're doing and how it's impacting us. Clear, honest, and frequent performance reviews. How often are you sitting down with the people that report to you to let them know how they're doing? You've asked them to do something. You've given them clear expectations. If you give them that written scope of work, you're coaching them up. How often are you sitting down with them and saying, hey, this is how you're doing. This is realistically how you're doing and how it's going here. We need to be clear. So when and where do you coach? When and where do you coach? Everywhere and all the time. I think great leaders are constantly coaching. One of the reasons that I wanted to plant a church under Brian is because Brian is one of those guys that's just always coaching. He'll coach you on your way into a meeting. You'll be like going into a meeting and be like, hey, we get into this meeting. Here's the three guys you really need to make sure you talk to. And when you talk to this guy, he don't like it when you do this. And by the way, Brian's already told you, you better be there 15 minutes early because the guy that you're meeting with don't like it when you're late. Then after the meeting, Brian will say, hey, how did that go? How did you think it went? Let me tell you what I saw that you did that I really like. And let me tell you what you did that I don't like. Clear coaching happens all the time. Good coaches are always coaching. You know, I saw recently the interview that Nick Saban did, the press conference after they lost a big game. You know, he's sitting there with his guys, and he walks in, and before he does anything else, before he says anything, he says, hey, I just want to let everybody know, these two guys are taking good responsibility, and I'm proud of them for doing that. He's coaching. I'm glad that they're taking responsibility. He's reminding them to take responsibility. He said, but they aren't the ones to blame for this. These are good men. They're more than just that. Then he tells them all this stuff about how he loves them. That's good coaching in a press conference after they lost. The coaching doesn't just happen before the game. It doesn't just happen to get ready for Sunday morning or in the Monday staff meeting. It's constant feedback, constantly feedback, giving your people that stuff. So clear expectations and then clear coaching. But here's the thing, we need to understand that clear expectations and clear coaching without clear accountability is just a suggestion. If you have the clearest expectations in the world and you're constantly coaching your people up, but there's no accountability for their performance, you're just suggesting it. You may as well say, it would be nice if you would put the signs out whenever you get around to it. It would be nice if you would load the trailer up in a timely manner so we don't have to pay the janitor the extra. It would be nice if you would practice once or twice during the week so that when you get up there to lead worship, you know the song, right? Those are just suggestions, unless there's accountability behind it. And in all of the time I've ever been in business or around business leaders or around business people, there's only ever been two types of accountability. It's either the stick or the carrot. That's it. There's the only two that there is. What happens when I do my job well, and what happens if I don't? If we're not going to have accountability, let's stop asking people to do stuff because we make ourselves look foolish. So we have a thing in our neighborhood. I don't know how many you guys saw the signs. Anybody got to put out A-frame signs? Some of you are too big for A-frame signs, and we love you. We're not jealous, but yay. But those of you that still have to put it, we still have to put out A-frame signs. And we're supposed to put them out every Friday. We're supposed to go out on Friday sometime between 4 and 5:30. That's our clear expectation for our sign guy. We put them out between 4 and 5:30. And then they have to be picked up on Sunday evening between 4 and 5:30. That's a clear expectation. And for 3 weeks in a row, the guy just didn't pick the signs up. He just didn't pick the signs up. And we were like, well, what are we going to do? I don't want to hold them accountable. What if I have to pick the signs up? That's going to be awful. I don't want to do that. And it finally like dawned on me, we're just suggesting to this guy that he picked the signs up. We're just suggesting it if there's no accountability. And so the next week he didn't have the signs picked up at 5:30. And so I jumped in my truck. This is embarrassing to admit in front of my sending pastor. I jumped in my truck and went out and picked up the signs. And I reached out to him and said, hey, I have the signs at my house because you didn't get them on time and I need them picked up at 5:30. And if you can't do it, then I got to do it. So let me know if you want to do the job or if I need to replace you. Since then, they go out on time and they get picked up on time. It was clear accountability. That was a stick. He didn't like it, right? The other kind of accountability is the carrot. What happens when people are doing a good job? What are you doing to reward and thank your people? I know that we all have tight budgets. We're church planners. We don't have all the money in the world. But if you don't have some money set in your budget to reward the people that are doing good work, then I suggest you do one of two things. One, get another strategic partner to help you with that. And number two, reevaluate your budget. You gotta have money in your budget to tell people that they're doing a good job. Buy people a cup of coffee. Take them out to lunch. Let them know, hey, we went above and beyond the goal here, and so we're going to do something better because of it. I know for a while you were doing something where you were taking people out to lunch at a restaurant. You had set clear performance. Talk a little bit about that, the clear performances, and then what would happen, where you could go to lunch, yeah. The three-tiered lunch thing. It was
yeah,
pretty cool.
You loved it.
I did.
First of all, on accountability, Mike did a really good job. There's only two kinds, carrot and stick. Something that helped me a lot, accountability is one of those words, kind of like church discipline, sounds super scary. And then when you experience it, it can be very loving and stuff. Accountability simply means, I mean, think about the word, to give an account. So I didn't put the signs out. If there's no accountability, the person who did not put the signs out never has to relay that account to anyone. But to give an account, whether it's carrot or stick, means you're going to tell that story. So I want to, if I'm going to be accountable, I'm willing to tell that story, whether it's the good story or whether it's the bad story. So at our place, we did. We came up with, these are the goals. This is the things that we want to see done. And, you know, the strategic plan determines those. We break those out into, you know, sectors of people's responsibility. And we said, this is the goal we want to hit. This would be an amazing goal, and this would blow everybody's mind. So we can go to lunch here, we can go to lunch here, or we can blow your mind with lunch. And at the end of the 12-week period or whatever it was, we got to celebrate that. And that's obviously carrot, or really big carrot.
Good. So carrot and stick. People need to know what we want them to do. Clear expectation. They need us to coach them on how to get there, clear coaching. And then they need to know whether or not they achieved it. That's clear accountability. And at this point, we've spent the majority of this time, and this was intentional, the majority of this session on people, because people are the most important thing. And if we've handled people, now we get to spend a little bit of time looking at process. I want you to know that every single organization has processes in place for how things get done. Every single organization, whether it's a business or a church, or any other organization, it has a process in place for how things get done. You think about it like this, Chipotle has a way that they make a burrito. There's a way that you make a burrito at Chipotle. You start on one side and you work your way down. And you don't walk into Chipotle and be like, well, but my mom doesn't make it this way. My mom makes it like, they don't care. It's Chipotle. They make it like this. Well, can I get, no, you can't, man. Do you want a tortilla or not? Do you want a bowl or not a bowl? Like, they don't care. There's a process. That's how they do it. And it's not that it's the only way to make a burrito, but it's the Chipotle way. Ford, when they first came out with the assembly line and they started cranking out these cars, they had this really famous line. It was, you can have this car in any color as long as it's black, right? That's the only way they did it. There was a process behind it. And in businesses and in churches, we need to have processes too. We need to know, how do we want things to get done? Because our people that have those clear expectations and get clear coaching and have clear accountability for it need to know, how do we do it here? How does it get done at this church? Because I've seen it done different ways. How do we do it here? So in my business world, we have these things called orange books. We have orange books because we started this process about 15 years ago, and now it's, you know, it's all digital, it's all on the computer and everything like that, but we still call them the orange books. And what it is this is the project coordinator's manual, and this is what happens. If the project coordinator in my company gets hit by a bus on the way into work, you know, we would be sad for a minute, but we'd have to continue to work. You know, I mean, this is a business, not a church. But anyways... We'd be sad for 15 minutes, and then, you know, we'd get to making profits again and tithe off of them. Anyways, We'd have to keep going, right? We'd have to keep going. God rest his soul. And the way that we would do that is anybody in the organization can open up that project coordinator manual and do his job. You can literally read how to do his job, exactly what it means to do this job. And the only thing the project coordinator does at Skyline Builders and Restoration is figure out how to take a job and issue subcontracts off of it. It's just not really all that important. He's got to issue subcontracts off it and all that stuff. And we have an entire manual on it. And when you think about church, we have really, really important processes that need to be in place. Like, how does somebody go from the parking lot into the building? What will happen when they get into the building? Who will talk to them? If they do the unthinkable thing and fill out one of those Connect cards, like gold to a church planter, you filled out a Connect card like the angels sing and the trumpets blare, what will we do with that information? We better be crystal clear on that. We better know what's supposed to happen. When can that person expect a phone call from the pastor? What is the next step? One of the things I like doing is when Pastor Jackie will sometimes post on social media, he'll post that he's writing his cards. He's reaching out to the people that have filled out these Connect cards. And I know, I don't even go to Cross Church, but I know that there's a process in place. There's no way that all of those people walked up to Pastor Jackie and handed them there, and then he just took them to his house and sat down and decided to do. I bet somebody gets those, compiles them, and brings them to him, and then he does the next thing. What is the process? And so as you are thinking about your church and thinking about, you know, this plant that you've been called to make, this great plant, you got to ask, how are the things going to get done at my church? What are the things that we have critical processes for? For example, first-time guests, what's the check-in process with kids? What are we doing to onboard people that are going to work with kids? Are we doing background checks? Do we have fingerprint clearance card? Like, what are we doing with these? People are going to trust us with their kids. Do we have a good process in place for that? What's the pickup process? How will we move kids around? What do we do if there's a fire? Kids, there's so much with process. How does someone go from being a first-time guest to a member? How do we collect and spend money? What is our process for stuff? And if it's all in your head as a church planner, I get it. You're an entrepreneurial person, but you got to start getting it down on paper so that it can be replicated, so that you're not the only one doing it. If you're the only person that knows what to do with a Connect card, you are in a bad spot, and you are not giving somebody else the opportunity to follow their calling, which is to come alongside of you and help you with that process. So what are the processes that you have at your church? Valley Life has a great tool for this called our iPod. Before we launch a church, before Brian would let any of us church planters go out and launch a church, we have these iPods. And so here's just a copy of our communications iPod. iPod just stands for, what are we going to do initially? Like, what's the very, very first thing that we're going to do? And then what are we going to do after that? You know, what is part of it? What is what happens? And we have all these different processes in place, whether it's a communication iPod, a worship process iPod, and you don't care about ours so much is to know that they are out there. You need to know how you're going to get stuff done. And if you want a copy of ours, we'd be happy to share all of those. We'll put our emails up here afterwards. We have a iPod for every single area of ministry, communications, worship, kids.
Yeah. And the iPod, if you're wondering, it stands for initially. You need this right off the bat. It's initial. Before you get started, you need to have these things done. And then you got P, priority. You work towards this ASAP. And then there's some stuff like optional. Are you going to do VBS or not? That's up to you. We don't really care about that. And then there's D. Some people say discouraged. I like to say, don't you dare. Yeah. D is, no, that's off the table. You're not going to, you know, have kids without a security program or something like that. So initial, priority, optional, and don't.
Yeah. You need to know what your processes are. You need to know what you're going to start with and what you're going to work to. Here's the thing. If you are a brand new church plant and you're trying to figure everything out, that's why we have this initial, right, and priority. You're not going to have every single thing in place, but you got to have the critical stuff in place. You got to know how critical processes are going to work, and you got to know who's onboarding the next person to do that, unless you want to do it all by yourself, and that's a bad plan. Don't do that. I think one of the cool ones that we've been talking through a lot lately, and so Brian's just going to walk us through it right now on the whiteboard, is just how does someone go from being a first-time guest to a member at one of our churches, at a Valley Life Church or one of their plants? So Brian, just walk us through that.
Okay, this is a super simple thing. And Jackie and I have talked about this before. Some people like to do, you know, three different buckets of people. And y'all have thought about this, I'm sure. And that is like newcomers or first-time guests. We always talk about FTG. The first-time guests to our church. And then the way we do it, we want you to become a member. That's going to say member. And then maybe some spiritual opportunity like missions or something like that. And I get that. A lot of y'all use those three buckets because there's people out there saying that. And I think that's great. But as I thought about it, I thought, I just can't. I tried it with my staff. We even took time working through it, and it just didn't make sense to me. And you might find this helpful, and it might be a waste of your time. I don't know. But here's what helped me. Is there something before the first-time guest? So the way I started thinking about it was a little bit like this, okay? We say we make disciples and plant churches. That's our slogan or our mission or whatever. We want to make disciples and plant churches. Even first Sunday, we even were a church. I was saying, we're going to plant churches by making disciples, and those disciples will be making churches. If you put first-time guests right there and say, yeah, they came to church, and what a big deal that is, and you guys have heard there's a greater difference between zero and one than between one and any other number. That zero down here is they drove by. Or I met this dude at the gym. And this line right here represents so much spiritual activity, okay? To go from I was driving by or I met this guy at the gym or my wife just left me to first-time guests. From first-time guests, you know, there's a lot of work that goes over here that we want to move people in our process, and yours may be different, it doesn't matter, but you want to move people towards that next step. For us, it is membership. So who is responsible for this? Now, there's a lot of different volunteers, a lot of different teams. Like Mike pointed out, if you think through the cards, you know, how's that card getting moved along until eventually the pastor or somebody is making this phone call, sitting down for coffee, explaining things. Maybe there's a membership class. At our place, we say you got to be a believer, a giver, a server, and a learner to join the church, whatever your process is. But to get them there, man, that's massive. Who's in charge of this process? Who is accounting for, giving an account, keeping someone accountable for the number of people in a given period of time that are taking that step, a number of people in a given period of time taking this step. And then for us, we go from membership. We want to move people to having a mission or a ministry. So member to missionary or member to minister is a big deal. Give me a number. How many were there? Was it zero? Was last week zero first-time guests and nobody took a step from first-time guest towards membership, meaning no new givers, nobody's serving for the first time or nobody going to community group for the first time? Tell me it was 20. Tell me it was zero. Let's just keep the number. Let's hold each other accountable. And from here, we, of course, you know, we plant churches. We want to send someone off in a church plant. So this is our process. From here, I can say, is the church going good? Well, Sunday felt great to me. There was that moment in the, you know, they changed keys and I loved it. Okay, great. And the room was full and it was loud, like Andy Stanley says. The room was full and it was loud, so I liked it. Okay. Do I have a problem? If I have no problems, then wonderful. But do I have a problem here? That's one thing. And who do I hold accountable? Or do I have a problem here? What this little thing does for me, and maybe it will help you, is separate out my problems. I may have two problems. I may have three. I may just have one, but if I don't have anybody, you know, showing up to church for the first time, then my problem is only here, and it doesn't mean I need to go to work here. This is a process for working on it and not in it.
Absolutely. So what are your processes? What are your processes? The people, processes. Here's the thing. If you don't have a process in place for how to do things the right way, you're inviting individuals to just do things their own way. Look, every single person that comes to your church has an idea about how it should be done. If you don't believe me, go ask people what songs they want to sing. Just do that. Just have one Sunday where you say, hey, we're just going to take requests today for songs. You would never do that. You would never do that. If you don't give people a process for how to take that Connect card and put it into the pastor's hand, you're inviting people to make it up themselves. And if they make it up themselves, they may or may not do it the way you want it done. So what is your process? So it's people, it's process, and then finally, it's performance indicators. Great organizations have key performance indicators that are known and tracked. This is where I'm going to lose some people. They're going to get upset with me and say, no, this is church. You don't understand. This isn't business. But I'm telling you, great churches know numbers and track them. Great churches know numbers and they track them. They're not afraid of them. They don't weaponize them or glorify them. They just know what they are. Amen. So what are your key performance indicators? At Skyline Builders, we have a scorecard. It looks like this. It says, hey, where are we at in billing? If we don't bill $15 million and our goal is $15 million, we got a problem. That's a problem. It's important. At Skyline Builders, if we don't keep cost of goods sold at 68%, we can't afford to pay our people a livable wage and we'll lose our people. So 68% is a key performance indicator. Every single person that works in my organization knows 68% is a key performance indicator. Everybody, every single painter, every laborer knows 68%. We better do that. And they know what they need to do to contribute to 68%. And you say, well, can it work in a church? Well, in a church like ours, we also have a scorecard because what gets measured gets done. So one of the things that we say is that we want to be a church that invites people. So we'll start off every single staff meeting like we did in 2021, and we will ask our staff, did you invite somebody to church this week? Who did you invite and how did it go? We say that we want a 75% invite rate from our staff, because I think that if our staff isn't doing it, our church won't do it. If the staff isn't doing it, the church won't follow. And so in 2021, right, this is a weird year. In 2021, we just laid it out there. Mike, the lead pastor, invited 90% of the time. 90% of the time, I invited somebody new to church on a Sunday. And I tracked it, and I knew it, and I got no problem saying it. And here's the thing. There ain't nobody in the church that's going to invite more people than the lead pastor. So if I'm not knowing what I'm doing, I better be willing to put that out. And I wanted to know, where are my other people at? Who are my paid staff? How are they doing with that? So we track that. What else are we tracking? Giving. Hey, you got to know what's going on with the money. Yep. I wish we didn't, but you do. So what's happening? How much do you take in a week? How much do you need a week? What is your nut that you have to cover? Because if you don't get that done, you're going to start focusing on other stuff. Like who are we going to cut? And how are we going to start like saving money? And you get on the slow race to the bottom. That's not a good place to be. So you got to track money. You got to track income. Here's some other things that we track. We track our year-to-date giving per person. All right. We've been told by a lot of people that in our area, $35 a head is what we need to aim for. And so we track that. It tends to translate. I don't know what it is for your area, but you need to know. If you go to any single business in America and ask the leader of the business what the five key performance indicators are there, I guarantee they know what they are. I guarantee Techno Coatings, which does all the painting at Disneyland over there, knows that they need to put up 587 gallons of paint a night. That's what they have to do in order to maintain the contract to paint at Disneyland. They have painters in there every single night. That's what they do. Every single night. At Chipotle, they know how many burritos need to get made an hour on that line in order for them to make it. And those people are painting roller coasters and making burritos that are going to make you sick. You all are doing the work of the Lord. You have to know what's going on with the numbers. What are those numbers? We track first-time guests. We track total attendance. We track kids' attendance, youth attendance, all the attendances. We sure as heck track baptisms. And people say, well, you can't track baptisms. That's the Lord's work. Yeah, the Lord's going to build his church, and he's going to save people. And I want to know how many people we baptized this year. I'm not going to apologize for that. I want to know how many people we baptized this year. I want to know what our goal was for baptisms this year. And I want to know why we're not baptizing people. Is it because we're not inviting non-Christians? Is it because we're doing a bad job of discipleship? Well, what is the reason behind it? That number doesn't tell me that, but at least it gives me a place to go and look and key in that I have a problem. We got to know what the numbers are. Key performance indicators are important. We're about out of time. The business of church planning, maybe more, but it's certainly not less than people, processes, and performance indicators. We know that God will build his church, but we're going to do the work of the planner. We're going to work hard in these areas. And so that's what we have for you tonight. Monty, I think. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's give him a hand, please. Wow. Dude, that was a lot, man. Okay. Hey, in your book, we really like for you to write down these three questions, and you can determine the answer to these at your free time. But what did you hear? What will you do about it? And who will help you? Okay? Those three, man. What did you hear? What are you going to do about it? And, dude, I need some help. And they've given you their email addresses, so there's a great place to start right here. Okay? Man, I wrote down on my notes, man, I wrote down a bunch of stuff that they said. One of the things that I even noticed is Mike even talked about, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but Mike talked about giving praise to people and you taking the blame. You remember he said that? And then, did you hear his story afterwards? He talked about my father-in-law started this business and, you know, 50, and he talked about all the good stuff about the business, about his father-in-law, when Mike, for the last, I don't know how, 15 years or so, had been building the build. He didn't give any praise to himself. He gave all the praise to his father-in-law. And I went, dude, I don't even know if you meant it or not, but you actually did what you said to do right there. So that's a man of integrity. And there's just so many other great things, man, that I wrote down personally that, man, and it is all about people, isn't it? Man, it's all about people. And we got to make people better. I love that. I love that statement. Hey, I'm going to pray with you, and then we're going to dismiss for dinner. Dinner is just literally out this door and just go that way. You can't miss it. It's just you run into it right there, okay? You can't miss it. So let me pray for you. Father, I thank you so much for Mike and for Brian, the wisdom that they shared. Father, the passion in which they shared it. Father, I thank you that I got a chance to take a lot of notes. Father, things that I can use, Father, this next week. Lord, I pray that, Father, the things we heard will not just go in one ear and out the other, but Father, that we'll actually listen, that Father will evaluate the things, the Father, that we heard, the things we need to do, and Father, if we need help, Father, give us people in our life that can help us in these matters. Lord, we love you very much. We thank you for the food we're going to eat. Father, I pray a blessing on these guys and these gals in your name. Amen.